Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 456, titled Compendium on Nazi and Fascist Connections to September 11th. This is being recorded on April 18th of the year 2004. WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word. Older programs available for download only, also on Real Audio, at a longer URL linked to both the www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire List is one word. Within a week or so of the airing of this program, there will be a detailed, annotated, article-length description of For the Record Program 456 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Frequently, those descriptions contain information that I did not have time to fit into the original broadcast, as well as links to key articles, so listeners should be sure to follow up on those descriptions. Again, For the Record section, www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire stocks all of the various programs and lectures that I've done over the years. I do not get money from the arrangement with Spitfire. Be aware that the www.spitfirelist.com website is now equipped with a search function, so you can search the detailed descriptions that I'm putting together. And also, we now feature the landmark text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by Paul Manning. That is available for download for free on the Spitfire website. Now, as I have done for the last two programs, this broadcast is a compendium in which I am grouping together information for the most part, although not exclusively, presented in previous broadcasts, so that listeners can have some of this key information grouped in a single entity. From my conversations with listeners, it seems that that is something that will help a lot of the members of the audience to get a handle on this vitally important but extremely complex event. We're going to begin by reviewing some information that we've looked at. Now, this is sort of an entree into the subject of Nazi and fascist connections to September 11th, taking a look at two of the people that are involved with the Al-Taqwa milieu. That's the Bank of the Muslim Brotherhood that we looked at last week. And bear in mind the historical and ideological fascist connections to the Muslim Brotherhood and Bank Al-Taqwa. One of the people who looms in the background of Al-Taqwa, not necessarily directly involved with Al-Taqwa, although possibly centrally involved with Al-Taqwa, but one of the people whose names crops up in connection with Al-Taqwa is the late François Genoux, a key operative of the Third Reich in the pre-World War II, World War II, and post-World War II periods. Originally a Swiss national, Genoux was very close to the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. He also was very much involved with the diaspora of Nazi war criminals abroad, helped to distribute the Third Reich's finances in the post-war period, and has come to the fore defending a potpourri of individuals ranging from Klaus Barbie and other Nazis. He helped to finance the defense of Adolf Eichmann in Jerusalem. Genoux has also been very active in the Muslim and Arab world and has also helped to defend far-left-wing terrorists in Europe as well. In an article about François Genoux called Hitler's Swiss Connection, David Lee Preston wrote in the Philadelphia Inquirer of January 5, 1997, "In the preface to the Martin Bormann document, Hitler's Table Talk, Genoux wrote that Hitler wanted the people of the Third World to carry on the work of the Thousand-Year Reich." And then describing an article from a passage from the article The Swastika and the Crescent by Martin A. Lee, published in the Southern Poverty Law Center's intelligence report in spring of 2002. "As Germany's defeat loomed during the final months of World War II, Adolf Hitler increasingly lapsed into delusional fits of fantasy. Albert Speer, in his prison writings, recounts an episode in which a maniacal Hitler, quote, pictured for himself and for us the destruction of New York in a hurricane of fire. The Nazi Führer described skyscrapers turning into gigantic burning torches, collapsing one upon another, the glow of the exploding city illuminating the dark sky," unquote. An approximation of Hitler's hellish vision came true on September 11th, when terrorists destroyed the Twin Towers in New York, killing nearly 3,000 people. And of another of the Al-Taqwa principals, another Swiss-born Nazi affiliate, this Ahmed Huber, born Armand Friedrich Huber, We read this coming from the article Unlikely Allies Bound by a Common Hatred. That was authored by Peter Finn. It appeared in the Washington Post of April 29th of 2002. By his, Ahmed Huber's account, a group of aging SS officers and members of Hitler's personal guard, who meet every few weeks in the German state of Bavaria for beer and conversation, recently bestowed the title Honorary Prussian upon bin Laden. They praised his valiant fight against the United States, Huber said. One of the members called Huber after the meeting to tell him that henceforth they had decided to call the Al-Qaeda leader Herr von Laden. Huber said. Well, in these somewhat anecdotal accounts, we can see an embodiment of what I believe is arguably the most important aspect of the September 11th attacks, namely the pivotal role played by Nazi and fascist elements in not only the attacks themselves, but also in the events surrounding the attacks and the milieu that appears to have underlain those attacks. Now, in our last broadcast, we looked at not only the fascist history, but the fascist ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Bank Al-Taqwa is reported by investigators to be centrally involved with the financing of Al-Qaeda and other Islamist terrorist groups, including Hamas. The Bank Al-Taqwa is the main financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood, and again, we went into the Brotherhood's fascist ideology, its combining of fascist economics with Islamist theory in our last broadcast. We also looked at the fact that Youssef Nada, the head of Bank Al-Taqwa, had, according to the book Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBeviere, been a Third Reich intelligence agent in World War II. What we're going to look at now is an item that we looked at first in For the Record program number 416. We're going to excerpt an article called Islamism, Fascism, and Terrorism. This is a four-part series by Mark Erickson. It appeared in the Asia Times in November of 2002. Part two appeared on November 5th of 2002, and in this particular article, again, Islamism, Fascism, and Terrorism by Mark Erickson of the Asia Times, an interesting detail is presented about Youssef Nada. Another valued World War II Nazi collaborator was Youssef Nada, current board chairman of Al-Taqwa, Nada Management, the Lugano, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, and Bahamas-based financial services outfit accused by the U.S. Treasury Department of money laundering for and financing of bin Laden's Al-Qaeda. As a young man, he had joined the armed branch of the secret apparatus, Al-Jihaz al-Siri of the Muslim Brotherhood, and then was recruited by German military intelligence. When Grand Mufti el-Husseini had to flee Germany in 1945 as the Nazi defeat loomed, Nada reportedly was instrumental in arranging the escape via Switzerland back to Egypt and eventually Palestine, where el-Husseini resurfaced in 1946. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem himself, as we've seen in many past broadcasts, held the rank of major in the SS, was a key Axis spy working for both primarily Nazi Germany but also fascist Japan, and the Grand Mufti was instrumental in recruiting Muslims to the fascist cause. In turn, the Nazi alliance with the Grand Mufti was an outgrowth of the geopolitical theory of the Earth Island. This is central to an understanding of how these seemingly strange political bedfellows of Muslims and Arabs, often despised by white supremacists and neo-Nazis, and the Third Reich, and also underground Reich elements and so-called neo-Nazi elements in the post-war period, this strange alignment, this collaboration between strange political bedfellows is an outgrowth of the Earth Island theory. Quickly, if one looks at a map or globe, there is one giant stretch of land running from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, Eastern Europe, encompassing most of the Middle East, the former Soviet Union, India, China, and Pakistan. That giant landmass was termed the Earth Island, and it contains most of the world's land, most of the world's population, most of the world's mineral resources, including most of the world's proven petroleum reserves, and across the middle of it, running from Eastern Europe and the Balkans all the way across the Middle East, and again parts of the former Soviet Union, India, Pakistan, and China, is a vast stretch of land inhabited largely by Muslim populations. At the end of World War I, actually really before that, but during the World War I and post-World War I period, Nazi theoreticians and German geopoliticians looked at that area and saw an alliance between the German and Nazi forces and some of the Muslim populations of the Earth Island as an ideal vehicle for controlling the world. They believed if they controlled the Earth Island, they would control the world. And with a combination of anti-imperialist sentiment in the period between the wars, with the Middle East largely being either French or British colonies, with anti-Semitism being a common bond, with a desire to split off some of the Soviet Central Asian republics from the then Soviet Union, and in the background with a desire to use the Muslim populations of the world, Arabs in particular, as an anti-American cadre, the alliance between the swastika and the crescent was formed. And we're going to be taking a look at how that alliance has played out, the role that it appears to have played in the events in and around September 11th. And one of the important things to be looking at concerns networking. We're going to be looking at networking between Third Reich elements such as Youssef Nada and so-called neo-Nazi elements in the U.S. and Europe, and in turn, those elements' alliances with Islamists in the Middle East and around the world. I also want to call people's attention to connections between elements in the so-called overworld and the so-called underworld. We're going to be taking a look at neo-Nazis, usually viewed as part of the underworld, and we're going to take a look at how they fit into this mosaic, and we're going to take a look at evidentiary tributaries connecting them with relatively powerful economic and political figures in the overworld. Now, one of the people who, like Youssef Nada, again, Third Reich intelligence agent and head of the bank Al-Taqwa, accused by numerous investigative authorities of helping to finance Al-Qaeda and bin Laden, one of the principal people involved with Al-Taqwa is the aforementioned Ahmed Huber, nee Friedrich Armand Huber, again, a Swiss-German, basically. An individual who is a director of Bank Al-Taqwa and who himself embodies something of a link between some of the elements of the overworld and some of the elements of the underworld, and also a link between the past and the present. In the description for the Record 456, there will be links to numerous articles, including three very important articles about the Al-Taqwa milieu by Kevin Coogan, the author of Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International that we've used so often in the past. In Kevin Coogan's article, The Mysterious Ahmed Huber, Friend to Hitler, Allah, and Bin Laden, he sums up some of the many connections of Ahmed Huber. Ahmed Huber was heavily influenced by the aforementioned Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and he also networked with François Genoux. Another of the main influences on Ahmed Huber was a guy named Johann von Leers. Von Leers had been the director of anti-Semitic propaganda for Joseph Goebbels' Third Reich propaganda ministry. He later was part of the Nazi diaspora to the Middle East. He converted to Islam, changed his name to Omar Amin von Leers. By the way, Huber also converted to Islam and went to work for Nasser and survived until 1965. Von Leers was a major influence on Ahmed Huber, as was the Grand Mufti. And again, former Third Reich intelligence agent Youssef Nada, head of Bank Al-Taqwa, defendant in the trillion-dollar lawsuit by survivors of September 11th, helped the Grand Mufti to escape from Germany to the Middle East. In Kevin Coogan's article, Mysterious Ahmed Huber, Friend to Hitler, Allah, and Bin Laden, he describes some of Ahmed Huber's many connections and background as follows. After spending more time in the Middle East, Huber abandoned his earlier pro-Israeli views with a vengeance. He told the French investigative journalist Pierre Payen that in 1965 he began to accept the views of the Egyptian-based Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Amin al-Husseini, who gave Huber a, quote, totally different version, unquote, of the history and nature of the Third Reich. The Grand Mufti knew Hitler personally and actively collaborated with the Axis powers in World War II. The Mufti was even responsible for creating the Bosnian-based 13th Waffen-SS Division that was composed of Muslim recruits. Parenthetically, I would note that the Grand Mufti also helped to recruit the 21st and 23rd Waffen-SS Divisions, two other Balkan Muslim SS Divisions. 21st was Skanderbeg, composed largely of ethnic Albanian Muslims from Kosovo. The 23rd Waffen-SS Division was the Kama Division, also composed largely of Bosnian Muslims. We're going to come back to the influence of the Grand Mufti and his SS legions in the Balkans. We're going to take a look at contemporary outcroppings of this legacy later on in the broadcast. Again, turning back to Huber. Huber further told Payen that, while he was in Egypt, he also grew close to Johann von Leers, a fanatical Jew-hater, former Nazi propaganda ministry official, and the Grand Mufti's good friend. Leers had relocated to Egypt in the mid-1950s, where he converted to Islam and changed his name to Umar Amin von Leers. He remained in Cairo until his death in 1965, helping to direct Nasser's propaganda apparatus, which regularly churned out Nazi-like anti-Semitic propaganda throughout the Arab world. Back in Switzerland, Huber next became close friends with the Swiss banker François Genoux, whom Huber recalls first meeting in pro-Arab associations, unquote. Best known for funding SS butcher Klaus Barbie's legal defense team, Genoux held the legal copyright to writings by Hitler, Goebbels, and Martin Bormann. Genoux, who committed suicide in 1996, is also believed to have played a key role in the post-war management of Nazi funds. In the late 1960s, he also worked closely with the radical Palestinian groups, particularly the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, or PFLP. Along with organizing legal support for captured PFLP militants, he even helped coordinate the PFLP's hijacking of a Lufthansa Boeing 747 en route from Delhi to Aden. Through his ties to the PFLP's leader, Dr. Wadi Haddad, who affectionately dubbed him Sheikh François, Genoux befriended Ilyich Ramirez Sanchez, better known as Carlos the Jackal. Both men remained in close contact right up to Genoux's death. By the way, the wife-to-be of Carlos the Jackal, a woman named Isabel Couton-Père, is a law partner of Jacques Vergès, another Genoux protégé, who was reported to be moving in the direction of representing Saddam Hussein in his supposedly upcoming war crimes trial. By the way, I would note that one of the passengers on that Lufthansa Boeing 747 that was hijacked was Robert Kennedy Jr., of all people. Continuing. At the same time, Genoux was developing close ties to the leftist PFLP. Huber was actively promoting pro-Arab views inside the Swiss left. While working as a social democratic journalist whose beat was the Swiss parliament, he became involved with the Bern Nonconformists. The nonconformists were a mix of 1960s counterculture activists, poets, painters, and new leftists. Inside the nonconformists, Huber used leftist rhetoric to push an anti-American, anti-Israeli, and strongly neutralist line. In the 1970s, however, he found it increasingly difficult to operate inside the left. The Swiss Socialist Party finally expelled Huber in 1994 for Khomeinism, anti-feminism, and contact with radical rightists, unquote. Huber's statements regarding September 11th reflect a broader consensus inside the far right. They also echo the remarks of his friend Horst Mahler, a former leader of the far-left terrorist group, the Rote Armee Fraktion, or RAF, also known as the Bader-Meinhof Gang, who is today a leading spokesman for the far-right National Demokratische Partei Deutschland, or NPD, parenthetically, the top German neo-Nazi party. Shortly after the World Trade Center attack, Mahler issued a statement entitled Independence Day Live. In it, he argued that 9/11 marked the end of the American century, the end of global capitalism, unquote, and with it, the end of the secular Yahweh cult of Mammonism, unquote. Huber is also a popular speaker at NPD events. On October 11, 2000, for example, he addressed the 7th European Congress of the NPD's youth organization, the Junge Nationaldemokraten, or JN, on the topic Islam and the New Right, unquote. By the way, I would note that Horst Mahler, when he was working for the Baader-Meinhof gang, was also a part of a milieu, namely the Baader-Meinhof gang, that was receiving aid from François Genoux. I would also note the NPD, the top German so-called neo-Nazi party, is very closely affiliated with the American National Alliance, the top American so-called neo-Nazi party, and an institution that we're going to look at later on in the program. What we're going to look at next concerns François Genoux and the extent to which his name crops up in connection with the events around September 11th. Again, bear in mind that the bank Altaqua was described as being an institution that helped to fund Al-Qaeda. A U.S. Treasury Department report said that bank Altaqua was actually of aid to Al-Qaeda after September 11th. Of the relationship between Ahmed Huber and François Genoux, we read, turning to the book Dollars for Terror, The United States and Islam, "During his many tribulations, Ahmed Huber became acquainted with the neo-Nazi banker François Genoux, whose path in life presents a singular summary of the interconnections, the specific alliances that have been tied and untied between Islam and the swastika. Pierre Payen, who thoroughly studied the parallel lives of this enigmatic destiny, interviewed Ahmed Huber at length. Ahmed Huber explained to him that he is sympathetic to François Genoux because everyone jumps on him," unquote. Still referring to the neo-Nazi banker, Huber told Payen, "I never asked him any questions, but I noted that in circles as different as the German right, the Islamic movements of Asia, the Palestinians, and in the Maghreb, people speak of him with great respect." By the way, the Maghreb refers to Algeria and Morocco and Tunisia, some of the North African Mediterranean Islamic countries. Beginning again, "I never asked him any questions, but I noted that in circles as different as the German right, the Islamic movements of Asia, the Palestinians, and in the Maghreb, people speak of him with great respect. Everyone told me he helped us. I have the impression that he played an important, though discreet, role. It was I who introduced him," meaning Genoux, "to the Iranians. I said to them, 'He is a friend. You can trust him.' Here in Switzerland, he was very active in opposing the anti-racist law inspired by the Zionists who wanted to criminalize revisionism," unquote. I would also note that in an article that we're about to excerpt from the San Francisco Chronicle of March 12th of 2002, François Genoux, and by the way, that article was excerpted at considerable length in For the Record 352, François Genoux was described as having financed the Ayatollah Khomeini's exile in France. This article also alleged that Genoux was heavily involved with the founding of Bank Altaqua. The article, "Swiss Probe Anti-U.S. Nazi" by Jay Bushinsky, it appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle of March 12th of 2002. And of the allegation that François Genoux helped to found Bank Altaqua, we read, "Authorities believe Genoux founded Bank Altaqua and allocated its resources to support international terrorists such as Vladimir Ilyich Ramirez, alias Carlos the Jackal, and bin Laden." If this allegation is true, it would suggest that Ahmed Huber, who at one point was meeting with Genoux on an almost daily basis, and perhaps Youssef Nader as well, were functioning as cutouts for Genoux and, beyond that, the Underground Reich. It was also alleged by European money laundering expert Ernest Backes that organizations set up by François Genoux were not only involved in helping to finance the activities of September 11th, but also involved in some of the security speculation that appears to have taken place. Furthermore, Backes states that François Genoux had been a financial advisor to the bin Laden family. These allegations were contained in a radio interview that was given by Ernest Backes to Rolf Bouvier and Pierre Matthias of Bayerischer Rundfunk Online. That article/broadcast is titled "Insider Trading Prior to the Attacks in the U.S., Speculating on Terror, Who Profited from the Attacks?" It was done on September 25th of 2001. Of the relationship between François Genoux and the bin Laden family, whom Bacchus alleges were financial, had François Genoux as one of their financial advisors, and of the alleged connections of François Genoux to the funding conduits that helped to finance September 11th and engaged in security speculation, we read, financial expert Ernest Bacchus of Luxembourg has studied white-collar crime in the field of banking for many years. According to him, there are indications of unusual transactions with which the groups associated with bin Laden could have earned money. You can, for example, examine whether within a certain period of time there's been an attack against the securities of a given airline company. Since these securities are safe in a clearing system, you can't get an overall view of who the owner was at a given time. According to Bacchus' information, the trail leads to Switzerland, to the accounts of an organization that was founded by the late lawyer François Genoux and evidently still survives, says Bacchus. One of the grounds for accusation is that this Swiss attorney had the closest connections with the bin Laden family, that he was an advisor to the bin Laden family, one of its investment bankers. It's known for certain that he supported terrorism and was the estate executor for Hitler and part of the terror milieu. And an associate of, friend of, and lawyer for François Genoux, a fellow named Baudin Dunant, is a member of the board of directors of SECO, the Saudi investment company. That is the European-based holding company headed up by Islam bin Laden, bin Laden's half-brother, and which serves as one of the major managerial points of control for the vast bin Laden business empire. This information comes from the book In the Name of Osama bin Laden by Roland Jacquard, published in softcover by Duke University Press, copyright 2002. Speaking of SECO, Baudin Dunant and his connection to Genoux, this company, established by the bin Ladens in 1980, is the flagship for the group's activities in Europe. It is headed by Islam bin Laden, and the board of directors is made up almost exclusively of members of the family clan, except for a Swiss citizen, Baudin Dunant. This well-known lawyer from French-speaking Switzerland, who was on the boards of several dozen companies, came to public notice in 1983 when he agreed to represent the Swiss banker François Genoux, a controversial figure who had been a disciple of Hitler and sole heir of Goebbels' copyrights before becoming one of the financiers of the FLN during the Algerian War. The friendships of the bin Ladens sometimes seem surprising, but they are logical. François Genoux has always been pro-Arab. So again, in addition to the allegation from the Chronicle article that François Genoux actually was behind the founding of Bank al-Taqwa, certainly close to Ahmed Huber, in addition to the allegation by Ernest Bacchus that Genoux-founded institutions were involved with the funding of September 11th and allegedly profited from some of the security speculation, and in addition to the fact that, according to Bacchus, Genoux was a financial advisor to the bin Laden family, note that friend and legal and professional associate of François Genoux, Baudin Dunant, is a member of the board of directors of SECO, the European holding company that is one of the principal focal points of the bin Laden business empire. Islam bin Laden denies any connection with his half-brother's terrorist activities, but European investigators disagree. Now, we are going to go back to the subject again of Nazi and fascist connections to September 11th, and we're going to take a look at some of the networking between the Islamo-fascist al-Taqwa milieu and other fascist elements. Primarily, at least initially, we're going to take a look at some evidentiary tributaries connecting the al-Taqwa milieu with elements of Italian fascism and the P2 Lodge. Note again how the world of international finance and some of the institutions we're looking at unites elements of the overworld with elements of the underworld. Elements associated with terrorism are in fact part of the same milieu as some very, very powerful elements and institutions that one sees in the mainstream press. Now, of Bank al-Taqwa, turning to an essay that we've used a number of times, and there will be links to this essay in the description for the record program number 456. This is an essay by the brilliant Kevin Coogan. It's titled Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa. And there will be a link to this article in the description for the record 456. Now, again, we're looking at connections here between the Islamist Al-Taqwa network and Italian fascist elements and Italian reactionary elements that ostensibly at least are opposed to the Muslim immigration into Europe. So, again, this is an example of strange bedfellows. We're going to take a look at how the milieu of Al-Taqwa intersects with the milieu of Italian fascism. Turning now to the Kevin Coogan essay, speaking of the founding of Al-Taqwa in 1988, the goal of the meeting with the notary was the founding of Al-Taqwa Management Organization S.A. that said it would be concerned with importing and exporting various goods around the world. 333 of the 1,000 shares at 100 Swiss francs a share went to Mohammed Mansour and his wife. 332 went to Huber. Nada and Hemat took the rest. Mansour was named the president, but rarely was the clause in the contract papers mentioned that each decision must be co-signed by the minority holders Nada and Hemat. Among the 500 shareholders, besides Huber and Hemat and Nada, were, quote, also a notorious right extremist from Italy, unquote. Not further identified, but this is Alessandro Karim Abdul Gay, that is the extremist there. And among the other 500 shareholders are three members of the Bin Laden family. Now, of Alessandro Gay, last name spelled G-H-E, we read this from the article A Terrifying Alliance by Yael Haran on the website EnduringFreedomOperation.org. And again, there'll be a link in the description for the show. Of Alessandro Gay, an Italian fascist and member of Ordine Nuovo, and one of the principal shareholders in Al-Taqwa. Another connection involves Al-Taqwa group shareholder Alessandro Gay, an Italian radical who has been questioned by his country's security forces about his links to Bin Laden. Gay was a member of the Italian neo-fascist Ordine Nuovo that began coupling up with Muslim radicals in the 1970s, says Eli Carman. And in addition to Alessandro Gay, again of the Ordine Nuovo group founded by Pino Rauti, a veteran of the Salò Republic that succeeded Mussolini's dictatorship in Italy after the Germans invaded in World War II. Also, by the way, part of the coalition that links Silvio Berlusconi of the fascist P2 Lodge with the Alleanza Nazionale of Gianfranco Fini. That organization, Alleanza Nazionale, is the successor to the Italian Fascist Party of Mussolini. It first incarnated as the MSI, the Movimento Sociale Italiano, and then ultimately became the National Alliance. What we're going to look at now, again, are more evidentiary tributaries connecting the milieu of Al-Taqwa with the milieu of Italian fascism. One of the key people in Al-Taqwa is Ahmed Idris Nasreddin, and his wider circle, as described in the Kevin Coogan essay about Islamists, the far right, and Al-Taqwa, involves people from the Alleanza Nazionale. Gustavo Selva belongs to Nasreddin's wider circle. The former journalist and today parliamentary member of the post-fascist Partai Alleanza Nazionale, Selva was, until April 19, 1999, involved in the Roman-based business, the Arab-Italian Consulting House. 6 months before it went under, on September 18, 1998, a certain Sergio Marini was named the firm's official receiver. Marini was, together with the Nasreddin International Group Limited Holdings, also part of the Milan-registered Line Investment SRL. Since 1988, Marini was CEO of Line Development Light Industry and Environment Development SRL in Rome, whose administrative director was Abdurrahim Nasreddin, along with his deputy, Galeb Hemat, himself a founder of Al-Taqwa. So again, note that through the world of international business and finance, we see links between the overworld and the underworld of international terrorism. Still more about evidentiary tributaries connecting the Al-Taqwa milieu with the milieu of P2 Silvio Berlusconi and the Alleanza Nazionale, we read, the deeper investigators dug, the more senseless it seemed. For example, The Liechtenstein registered Nasreddin International Limited Holdings on October 20, 1994, decided to change its name to Middle East and Turkey Investment Holding Limited. And then, 8 days later, it returned to its original name. There is also the fact that Nasreddin, at the founding of the Nasreddin International Group Limited Holding in January of 97, appointed, next to Dr. Enrico Walser as trustee, of all people, the Ticino lawyer Dr. Ercole Doninelli to the administrative board. Doninelli, until his death, was seen as the soul of the Lugano Finance Society, FIMO, that was widely involved in the financial scandals of the 1990s. FIMO also helped Italians to send up to 250 million Swiss francs yearly in capital flight. Even more definitive is the role FIMO has played since 1968 in the financing into the millions of the first projects of the, at the time, utterly unknown construction builder from Milan, Silvio Berlusconi. The knowledge of how capital from the married pair of Ercole and Stefania Doninelli went from ETI Holdings in Chiasso to more stops in the Interchange Bank, and from there to Italcantieri, a company headed by two Berlusconi strawmen, finally ended with the mass bankruptcy of FIMO. More about how the world of international business and finance connects people from the overworld, like Silvio Berlusconi, with people from the underworld, concerns the fact that Youssef Nada's attorney, Pierfelice Barchi, himself heavily involved with the Banco del Gottardo, at one point the Swiss subsidiary of the Banco Ambrosiano, and the correspondent bank, which Altaqua uses to avail itself of the Clearstream network, Pierfelice Barchi handled much of the Swiss investing for not only Silvio Berlusconi, but also for Prince Al-Walid, one of the wealthiest men in the world and a member of the Saudi royal family. Turning once again to the essay, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa by Kevin Coogan, we read, the Akita Bank of Nasreddin was also supposed to be concerned with the spreading of Islamic banking practices. The Lugano-registered affiliate of the bank listed, along with its founder Nasreddin, the Ticino-based Pierfelice Barchi. This attorney had great experience with rich and influential customers. Barchi was also concerned with the Ticino financial interests of Italian Prime Minister Berlusconi and the Saudi minority partner in Berlusconi's media group Mediaset, Prince Al-Walid Al-Talal. By the way, Prince Al-Walid is also a major stockholder in AOL Time Warner. We're going to take a look at a meeting that took place in the spring of 2002, and this took place in Mont Pelerin in Switzerland, and once again, we're going to take a look at networking between Ahmed Huber of Bank Al-Taqwa and European fascists, including an SS veteran of the Republikaner Party in Germany, Jean-Marie Le Pen of the fascist Front National in France, and the aforementioned Gianfranco Fini of the Alleanza Nazionale, the successor to Mussolini's fascist party, and also an element of the coalition government of Silvio Berlusconi. Turning once again to Kevin Coogan's article, The Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa, perhaps the most recent remarkable story concerning Huber comes from a brief item in the Swiss tabloid Blick that in an April 26, 2002 article by Alexandra Sote that Huber was involved in a meeting of far-right leaders from Europe. A photo showing Huber with Jean-Marie Le Pen accompanies the article. The Blick story, available on the web, is as follows. Mont Pelerin VD. Christian Cambuza, the promoter of the right extremist Jean-Marie Le Pen, the guru, assembles together some of the top leaders of the European right. On the idyllic Mont Pelerin, they debate their crude ideas. At his secret visit to a spa in Switzerland, Le Pen hardly remained alone. Rightist leaders from all over Europe traveled to meet the extremist presidential candidate who was hosted by Cambuza, Franz Schoenhuber, founder of the Republican Party in Germany and a former member of the SS. He talked with Le Pen, who constitutes, together with Schoenhuber, the Front National faction in the European Parliament. Gianfranco Fini, Italian post-fascist, Mussolini admirer and founder of the Alleanza Nazionale. He also was at the meeting with Le Pen and Schoenhuber. Ahmed Huber, 74, the Swiss, is on the Bush administration blacklist. I met Le Pen at Mont Pelerin as he went to Christian Cambuzat's spa, Huber told Bleak yesterday. At this extremist rendezvous, an American far-right politician was also supposed to have taken part, although is not identified. Christian Cambuzat said that Le Pen, after the election, had again become the sharpest weapon of the Front National because Le Pen changed his image from a venomous old man to a kindly U.S. TV evangelist, unquote. Proudly, Cambuzat brags, quote, "With me, Le Pen can relax well from his endeavors and openly link up with new contacts." Again, it's not the leader of the American far-right leader is not identified. One of the questions I have is concerns the possibility that might have been National Alliance leader William Pierce. But again, that's pure speculation. Among the motives that Kevin Coogan speculates about for this networking between European high finance and European fascists, and also some Islamo-fascists and major players in Saudi and Gulf and Persian Gulf finance, concerns the possibility of the shifting of the vast wealth that has accrued to the Persian Gulf oil states from American into European financial institutions and from the dollar into the euro. Kevin Coogan speculates about this, and this is a speculative element. The overwhelming thrust of this report has been to give the reader a great deal of empirical information that he or she may not have easy access to in order that they may evaluate the claims for themselves. I have avoided drawing any conclusions because I don't feel qualified to draw conclusions about the Islamist financial machinations this report discusses. However, I find it impossible not to put out a call for further research involving the overlap between Nazi and Islamist networks that seem to have been in continual contact from the 1930s until today. In the case of Janu, Huber, and Ramadan, this is becoming more and more impossible to avoid. By the way, Ramadan is Saeed Ramadan of the Muslim Brotherhood. We looked at him last week. Continuing. My own belief is that it is less the apparently fantastic and James Bond-like quality of this analysis that is most difficult to understand. The real difficulty is the utter ignorance of most Westerners, Americans in particular, about the very existence of people such as François Genoux. Thus, when Ernest Bacchus, one of Europe's leading experts in money laundering, told the Luxembourg-based economic journal Plus Minus last year that he believed the financial source of funds for the 9/11 terrorists would ultimately be traced back to Swiss bank accounts established by Genoux, few Americans had any idea what Bacchus could possibly be talking about. For this same reason, there has been virtually no independent investigation into SICO's Baudin-Dunant's relationship to Genoux, or, for that matter, the role of Syrian-born Muhammad Mardam Bey, believed to be related to a former Syrian foreign minister, has played both as a member of Magnan, Dunant and Associates, as well as Bey's possible links with Genoux. And what does it mean when we are told that Youssef Nata, for example, is believed by Egyptian authorities to have worked for German intelligence in World War II, and parenthetically that he allegedly helped the Grand Mufti escape from Germany at the end of the war? Continuing, it is not at all impossible that networks first developed in the 1930s, and who saw their economic power fantastically multiplied in the wake of the enormous hike in oil prices in 1973, are now engaged in trying to enact a major financial shift away from the dollar and Anglo-American financial networks, and to shift the vast wealth of the Muslim oil states into a new euro-based financial network that would vastly increase the power of those banks and financial interests in Europe associated with elements of far-right elites that survived World War II relatively intact. If this were at all the case, it would not be a new development. The very same attempt to develop an independent Saudi-German hookup to subvert the U.S. and British domination of the Saudi oil markets was actually attempted in the mid-1950s. At that time, the Saudi royal family, using the advice of the famous German banker Hjalmar Schacht, attempted to employ Aristotle Onassis to transport Saudi oil on new oil tankers that would be constructed in the shipyards of Germany. This attempt to break the Western oil control over Saudi Arabia was finally blocked by the United States, a story well documented in Jim Hogan's book Spooks. The documentation regarding this complex question is there for anyone who wants to examine it. Of course, I am not attempting to suggest a simple monocausal explanation for the current crisis. What I am suggesting is that sooner or later, these connections between the far right and groups like the Muslim Brotherhood that began in the 1930s and continue today will have to become the subject of serious and sober research in order to help us shed new light on the extraordinary circumstances we are living under today. One of the most fascinating areas in which the outcropping of World War II-era fascism has merged with Islamofascism and nationalism in the Balkans, that concerns the former Yugoslavia. The fellow who led the gang that executed Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street journalist, Wall Street Journal writer who was decapitated on worldwide TV, Omar Saeed Sheikh, was raised in the United Kingdom and was, by the accounts of contemporaries, a relatively moderate individual. However, when he went to the Balkans to assist the Bosnian Muslims who were engaged in the brutal civil wars that took place there during the 1990s, he became radicalized. And we're going to review an element from For the Record, number 425. This is from, in Danny Pearl book, Bernard-Henri Lévy says the next 9/11 is brewing in Pakistan. This by Ron Rosenbaum of the New York Observer of September 15th of 2003. And of Omar Saeed Sheikh, Mr. Levy captures this divide in his book when he reports that Omar played chess and read Mein Kampf. At one point during the C-SPAN interview, I asked him about Omar and Mein Kampf. There are those who say Hitler is dead, but among people like Omar, terrorists, jihadists like him, Hitler is spoken of with affection, right? True, Mr. Levy said. According to the testimony of one of the men he kidnapped in India, Omar was able to recite entire pages of Mein Kampf by heart. Mr. Levy gave a world-weary Gallic shrug. Everybody has the poetry he deserves, unquote. And he went on to add that Omar was not alone in seeking to finish what Hitler started. You have today, in Damascus, in Syria, in Libya, some people who think that the anti-Semitic message of the Nazis was a good message and has to be completed. And we're going to take a look at the recrudescence of German-style fascism mixed in with Islamofascism in the Balkans. The first president of the, quote, independent, unquote, Bosnia was Alija Izetbegović, and we're going to review some aspects of his background from past broadcasts. This from his obituary in the New York Times of October 20th of 2003. It's by David Binder. Alija Izetbegović, Muslim who led Bosnia, dies at 78. And of his background, that is to say, Izetbegović's background. During World War II, when Bosnia became part of the puppet Nazi state of the Croatian Ustashi, Mr. Izetbegović joined the Young Muslims, a group torn between siding with the German-sponsored Hanjar divisions organized by the German SS or with the Yugoslav communist partisans led by Josip Broz Tito. Mr. Izetbegović supported the Hanjars. After Tito's communist government was established in 1946, a military court sentenced Mr. Izetbegović to 3 years in prison for his wartime activities. Now, one of the people who assisted Alija Izetbegović, again, who worked with the 13th Waffen-SS, or Hanjar Division, founded by the Grand Mufti, was Osama bin Laden. From that same article, Osama bin Laden visited Izetbegović in Sarajevo in 1993 and sponsored some fighters from Arabic countries to fight on the Muslim side in Bosnia, according to a report in the German magazine Der Spiegel. One of the things I wonder is whether perhaps the paradigm from the anti-Soviet Afghan war of the 1980s might have been carried over into goings-on in the Balkans, and I wonder whether perhaps basically the same thing took place, whether elements of CIA were utilizing al-Qaeda in the Balkans on behalf of the Bosnians. That is pure speculation. But it is a matter of fact that Balkans wars of the 1990s helped not only to elevate people like Alija Izetbegović, who had fought with the Hanjars, but actually led to a recapitulation of the Hanjar division and other elements of German National Socialism infused with Islamic ideology. Turning now to an excerpt from an article, Albanians and Afghans Fight for the Heirs to Bosnia's SS Past. This is by Robert Fox from the Daily Telegraph of December 29th of 1993. Quote, of a new Hanjar division, these are the men of the Hanjar division. We do everything with a knife and we always fight on the front line, a Hanjar told one officer. Up to 6,000 strong, the Hanjar division glories in a fascist culture. They see themselves as the heirs to the SS Hanjar division formed by Bosnian Muslims in 1943 to fight for the Nazis. Their spiritual model was Muhammad Amin al-Hussein, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who sided with Hitler. According to UN officers, surprisingly few of those in charge of the Hanjars in Fožnica seem to speak good Serbo-Croatian. Many of them are Albanian, whether from Kosovo, the Serb province where Albanians are the majority, or from Albania itself. They are trained and led by veterans from Afghanistan and Pakistan, say UN sources, and strong presence of native Albanians is an ominous sign. It could mean the seeds of war are spreading south via Kosovo and into Albania, thence to the Albanians of Macedonia. Pakistani fundamentalists are known to have had a strong hand in providing arms and a small weapons industry for the Bosnian Muslims. And in addition to the resurrected Hanjar division, note that the Kosovo Liberation Army involved the sons and grandsons of many men who had fought with the 21st Waffen-SS or Skanderbeg division. I would note that under Alija Izetbegović, the deputy defense minister was also a veteran of Hanjar. This from the book Some Call It Peace, Waiting for War in the Balkans. Indicative of Sarajevo's intentions and priorities is the appointment in January of 1996 of Hasan Cengic to the position of Deputy Defense Minister, the man in charge of the implementation of reorganization. A veteran of the SS Hanjar Division during World War II, Cengic is a close personal friend and confidant of Alija Izetbegović, especially since the time they served together in the Yugoslav President Tito's prisons. And there will be more about the recrudescence of the Hanjar division in the description to the broadcast. Now, one of the things that we looked at in For the Record program number 443 were indications of networking between American neo-Nazis and elements of Al-Qaeda. Turning once again to the book Dollars for Terror, and once again about Ahmed Huber and some of his networking, we read, recently, Huber went to Chicago for a discreet conference that brought together, quote, the authentic right and the fighters for Islam, unquote. And he says that major decisions were taken. The reunification is underway. In For the Record program number 443, we took a look at the fact, and this will be annotated in the description, that the head of the National Alliance, William Pierce, and by the way, the National Alliance is closely affiliated with the German NPD, with which Huber and Horst Mahler were associated, in a 1998 radio broadcast, Pierce foreshadowed the attacks on the World Trade Center, saying basically stay out of tall buildings, and that New Yorkers who worked in buildings the size of the World Trade Center might want to consider wearing hard hats. We also looked at two evidentiary tributaries connecting the first World Trade Center attack with the Oklahoma City bombing, one running through the Philippines, and Abu Sayyaf co-founder Edwin Angeles, who says that he saw Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the first World Trade Center, at a meeting with Terry Nichols. We also took a look at the fact that a motel in Oklahoma City was apparently the site of networking between Timothy McVeigh and unnamed Middle Eastern men involved with the Oklahoma City bombing. That same motel was apparently one of the rendezvous places for Mohammed Atta and some of the September 11th conspirators as well, including Zaharias Moussaoui. We also took a look in For the Record program number 447 at the fact that Andreas Strassmeier, the son of Gunter Strassmeier, the security director for white supremacist compound Elohim City, was apparently engaged in trying to get a hold of a Lufthansa Boeing 747. And according to Carol Howe, Strassmeier was the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing. We also took a look, and For the Record 447, of the fact that in the Turner Diaries itself, there is foreshadowing of not only the attack on the Pentagon, but also on the World Trade Center. And again, this will be fleshed out in the description because we are running out of time. Bearing in mind indications of networking between American neo-Nazis and white supremacists and Islamists associated with the first World Trade Center attack and September 11th, and with the foreshadowing of the events of September 11th in the Turner Diaries, consider the following. This is from an article from Vanity Fair's issue of December of 2002. It's by the respected journalist Sebastian Junger. It's headlined Terrorism's New Geography, and it's about the triple border area where Argentina, Paraguay, and Brazil meet. The RISI here is an Argentine intelligence officer who infiltrated the tri-border area and witnessed networking between Al-Qaeda and other Islamist terrorists and American neo-Nazis. And there were Americans at the camp as well. Reese learned about one of them, and on January 12, 1996, he took a polygraph test and made a statement to the federal court in Buenos Aires testifying to everything he knew about this American. The man, whose name also won't be divulged, is an ex-Special Forces soldier who had been a communications expert in Vietnam and had seen combat there. He returned home to join the Michigan militia, then converted to Islam, worked in Jordan, and became associated with another American who had been investigated by the DEA for activities in Central America. Now, according to Reese, the Vietnam vet, who speaks Spanish, is in the Triple Border area with two other American extremists, acting as an instructor at one of the terrorist training camps. He is also responsible for security operations and provided armed guards when top al-Qaeda and Hezbollah associates, in particular Muganaya, were in town. According to Reese, the man had also been in the United States on September 11th and had provided logistical support to Mohammed Atta before the attacks. According to Reese, Aryan Nations had people in Triple Border area as early as 1985, and they were cooperating with Islamic extremists in the United States. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 456, Compendium on Nazi and Fascist Connections to September 11th. This is being recorded on April 18th of 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.